The Invitation. Responses to Disciples' Questions given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 18.
Beloved Bhagwan, you often talk to us about grace. It seems to be such a beautiful word, but my understanding of its meaning feels limited. I know that it is something you have. Could you speak some more about it?
Deva Anupu. Grace is one of the great mysteries of life. It is not something physical, not psychological, but something spiritual. It is not within your power to create it. Any created grace will be false, phony. Grace comes as a flowering of your being. The moment your meditation reaches to the deepest core, to the very center of the cyclone, a tremendous silence, peace and blissfulness arise within you. Grace is the total effect of all these qualities. Silence, peace, love, compassion, blissfulness, ecstasy. When these things arise in you, their flame, their fire, it starts radiating from your physical body. They are so much, they start overflowing you. That overflow of your inner ecstasy is what can be defined as grace. So it is possible a man or a woman may not be beautiful physically, but when grace arises, their physical beauty or their physical absence of beauty is completely changed. whatever their physique is overwhelmed by something inner which is far more powerful. It is just like a lamp. The flame is inside. What you see outside the glass of the lamp is the radiation. The glass may be beautiful. The glass may not be very beautiful. The glass may be made of crystal. The glass may be made in India. Once the inner flame is lit, you don't see the glass, you see the light. When the inner flame is not lit, you will see the glass because there is nothing else to see. And then you will differentiate between a beautiful man and an ugly man, a beautiful woman or a homely woman, just to avoid the word ugly. They have found a beautiful word, homely. But these distinctions remain only if the inner light is still dormant. Once the inner light comes radiating through the body, you don't see the body. You see a beautiful radiance, a beautiful aura surrounding the person. That is grace. Grace transforms your physical body completely. Because nobody can see now exactly what your physical body is. The grace is so stunning. Every gesture becomes so beautiful. Your eyes radiate a totally new silence. They open to such great depths that they become almost unfathomable. Your words are not just language. Something more is added to them. A fragrance, a beauty, a music, even your prose sounds like poetry. Ordinary words start having extraordinary effects because your inner experience gives them authority. Before it, they were empty, just used cartridges. They had nothing in them. Now they are still the same words. The container is the same, but the content is a new addition to it. Now the content radiates through the words. And you can see it in many ways. Gautam Buddha was born on the boundary line of India and Nepal. Now, Nepalese are not known for much beauty. They are part of the Mongolian race. Their size is small. Their faces don't show the beauty that you will find in Kashmir. But Gautam Buddha's statues are in a way not factual. I don't believe that such a beautiful man was born on the border of India and Nepal. I have been in the whole territory of Nepal and I have never come anything resembling perhaps Gautam Buddha was also just an ordinary Nepalese. But why the statues have been made so beautiful? The artists, the sculptors were not seeing only the physical frame of Gautam Buddha, they were also seeing a tremendously powerful aura around him that was making him so beautiful. And it would have been wrong to make his statues as he would have looked unenlightened. Those are statues after his enlightenment. Almost the same has happened. There has been found an inscription in the rocks near Galilee that describes Jesus Christ as an ugly man. Extraordinarily ugly. That if you had seen him, he was repulsive. His height in that inscription is only 4 feet 5 inches. And on top of it, he is described as a hunchback. Now, you cannot call such a man beautiful. But all the statues and the description of the disciples in the Gospels does not mention that he was a pygmy of 4 feet 5 inches height, that he was ugly and repulsive, that he was a hunchback. They describe him as poetically, as aesthetically as possible. And I am absolutely certain that they are not making it. It is not their desire to present Jesus Christ, their Master, to the world as beautiful. They have seen His beauty. But that beauty is not the ordinary beauty. That beauty is of grace. From the other side also you can see. You can find sometimes very beautiful people, physically. If you look they are tremendously beautiful. But if you are living close enough to them, you will find them, their ugliness starts coming out of their physical structure. The physical structure may be of Cleopatra, but Cleopatra to me was not a beautiful woman. She may have had a form of a beautiful body, but her intentions and her state of consciousness was very ugly. She cannot have any grace. She was selling her body to anybody just to remain the Queen of Egypt. She was not using the army to fight. She was using her own body. And great generals like Antony were caught into her trap. She was using her beauty for ugly ends. She could not have grace. So it is possible a man or a woman may be physically beautiful, but if his inner being is full of darkness, that darkness will show. There is no way for her to cover that darkness by any kind of makeup. In ordinary photographs, she will look beautiful. But in Russia, one scientist photographer, Kirlian, has developed very sensitive films that they take also the photograph of your aura. They don't only take your physical frame, but the light that surrounds you, that surrounds every living being, even the trees, even the leaves have an aura of their own. And that aura makes such a difference. If a man has grace, he will have a tremendously beautiful aura. So stunning to the eyes that he will forget about his physical body, whether it was beautiful or not. Christians have not been able to explain about the inscription and the discrepancy about the Gospels. Because they don't seem to understand the law of grace. Kirlian is the first man, as far as science is concerned, who has changed the whole approach. He takes the aura. His photographs are not only of you, but the subtle light that is radiating from you. There are people who have almost no aura. Their bodies may be beautiful, but their personalities will be ugly. Their intentions and ambitions and their desires will be of a very low character. And he has photographed people, simple people, innocent people, gardeners, farmers, fishermen, no desire to become the president of a country, no desire to become a prime minister, not even in dreams. It is enough for them if they can survive. They have nothing, but still in the evening they will play on their flute, they will dance, they will sing. They have beautiful auras in the photographs of Kirlian. Kirlian has opened doors of a new dimension which has not been taken much care of. Because it is of no use for warmongers. As your death approaches, your aura starts shrinking. It means your life is gathering itself at the center from where it can live condensed. The way you close your shop. He has puzzled by many things. For example, you have five fingers in the hand and your one finger is cut in an accident, but in Kirlian photograph there are 5 fingers still. The one that is no more still shows its aura. Aura is still there, the physical part is gone. There will be a difference because the physical fingers which are still there will show a substance in the middle of the aura. That one finger which is missing will show simply a photograph of the aura, but there will be no inner substance, non-substantial, but still the aura is there. Working deeply on it, he has given such a great contribution to medical science, but nobody seems to use it, because no government is interested in life. All governments are in the service of death. 75% national incomes are wasted on the armies and arms. People are living only on 25%. Just the other day I was reading a calculation of a scientist who says this is the highest peak of production in the world ever. We can feed more people than there are on the earth. There is no need for anybody to die through starvation. Science has provided every technology, but no politician, no political party is interested in it. No government is interested in it. Their interest seems to be very insane. If it was in my power, I would put all the presidents and all the prime ministers into madhouses. That is the right place where they belong. They are sick people. In fact, only a sick psychology can be ambitious. A healthy psychology is not ambitious. You are so happy as you are. There is no need for you to become a president of the country, then you will be happy. And no president is happy, because happiness has nothing to do with your post, with your money, with your power. It has something to do with your inner change, inner transformation. Kirlian has found that 6 months before a person is going to die, his aura starts shrinking. If care is taken that man can avoid death for a few more years. In the same way, he has found that before a disease shows itself on the body, 6 months before, he can guarantee that this disease is going to come. Although medically there is no way to check on him. The only way is when the disease comes. Before the disease happens, there starts a different kind of darkness on that part. And different diseases have different kind of colors. If he becomes part of the authoritative medical world, there is no need for people first to fall sick and then to be cured. Their disease can be prevented even before they have become aware of it. 6 months is enough time to cure it and to check it by Kirlian photography, whether it is curing or not. In the East, there has been for centuries the idea that before 6 months of your death, you stop seeing the tip of your nose. Because your eyes start turning upwards. A dead man's eyes are turned completely upwards. You can only see the white. That's why in every country, immediately a dead man's eyes are closed. So nobody else becomes afraid. Nobody gets an unnecessarily fearful impression, because eyes completely white. If you meet a man with completely white eyes, no black, you are going to freak out. Perhaps you may get paralyzed then and there and fall down. But it takes 6 months for eyes slowly to turn up. Because they are turning up, they cannot see the tip of their own nose. What Kirlian is saying, he has confirmed that old proverb absolutely right, that the distance is 6 months. And it is not only about men, about leaves, about birds, about animals. On leaves his work is tremendous. One of my sannyasin has sent a thesis just few days before. Listening to me, he became interested and he worked a whole doctoral thesis on the auras of the leaves. Before a leaf starts dying, you cannot see. It is still green. It is still alive. There is no way to say that it is going to be soon dying and will fall and disappear. But through Kirlian photography, other leaves which are going to live show a bigger aura, and the leaf that is going to die within 6 months' time starts showing a smaller aura. The day it will die, it will not show any aura, as if whole light of life has become condensed inside. Now it does not radiate. It is ready to leave this form of life for another form. But man can be immensely helped. If Kirlian photography is used on a wider scale, there is no need of so many hospitals, so many doctors, there is no need of so many surgeries, so many medicines. And this is the problem, this is the establishment which is preventing Kirlian photography to become part of the medical science, because it will make many surgeons, almost all surgeons, futile, unemployed. It will throw off all the doctors on the streets. All the great manufacturers of medicine will be out of business and bankrupt. These are the problems, because this is the establishment they go on preventing. Nobody thinks of man as such. Everybody thinks about his own interest, money, power, investment. There are many inventions lying down in government warehouses. Governments purchase them. And then don't bring them into market, because the people who are supporting those governments with money will be affected. Few days before, I have told you about one Japanese scientist who has been in Hiroshima for 1 year. He risked his life. He allowed himself to be open to the radiation that has still there. But it is lessening every day. The quantity is smaller, but the radiation is there. And his thesis was that radiation from atomic explosions or nuclear weapons can be used for creative purposes. The first immense experience was that he is 65, living 1 year in Hiroshima. Ordinarily it was expected that he will die of radiation, but now he looks of the age near about 45. He is 65. He has become younger. He has lost 20 years. He has become stronger. He has created few things and because I had talked about him, he must have heard my tape or seen the video. Perhaps I am the only man who has taken interest in him. He is coming on the 10th of September. And he has sent me near about $20,000 worth inventions that he has made. A belt which has inside it uranium and radiates in very minute doses. And he has been experimenting that if you keep that belt on your body for 1 year, it will give you tremendous energy, youth, long life, and many diseases that you would have suffered, you will not suffer. He has also sent a small soap-like thing that too is covered. You have to keep it in your bathtub and within 10-20 minutes the bathtub starts almost functioning as a hot spring water. It becomes hot and just resting in that water is enough to keep you healthy. There is no question for you to develop any diseases. He has also sent a small bottle which you have to take just 2 drops in water. For 10 minutes it keeps the water radiating and after 10 minutes it changes the whole quality of the water. It becomes sweeter, tasteful and immensely energy giving. One of the most significant war material producers in America is Lockheed. Lockheed has offered him, he has informed me, they wanted the belt and all that he has invented. The sole copyright, whatsoever price he wants, they were ready. But he refused. And he did well, because Lockheed would have used them for destructive purposes. It would not have come into the market for ordinary people. With the modern science, this has become a problem that invention, any discovery needs so much money and so much mechanism that only governments or very big firms like Lockheed or IBM, these people can afford. A scientist alone cannot work. He does not have the right instruments, which are too costly. But he was surprised that at least there is one man who supports And I had supposed that all the scientists of the world should make a world academy of scientists without any question of nation or race. And they will make it their fundamental constitution that they will function only for peace purposes. They will function only to help men live longer, live better, live more peacefully, live more beautifully, live without disease, without old age. Live more intelligently. They are not going to work for any government, communist or capitalist, Russian or American, for destroying this planet. The same has been the case with Kirlian. His discovery is now almost 50 years old. Has given much attention to him, and he is giving to you one of the great secrets. He can prevent all kinds of diseases happening. The grace is your aura, and as your inner being becomes more silent, your aura becomes more radiant, and just as Kirlian's photography has been able to cut the aura which your ordinary eyes cannot see, but a disciple in love and trust starts seeing things which an ordinary observer, outsider, will not be able to see. He starts seeing a grace. He starts hearing the music. He starts feeling a certain fragrance arising from the man. who is centered in his being, who is no more a personality but has become innocent individuality, whose connection is no more with the society but existence itself. His life is of love. He is love. That radiance of love and peace and silence is all part of his grace. That's why I said the word grace has tremendous meaning, because all that meditation gives you can be put together in one word, and that is grace. But don't create a desire for it. Don't long for it. It comes if your meditation goes deep. You cannot do directly anything with grace. You can only wait. Your waiting has to become such deep, so trustful, that it will come when the time comes. Just as the trees go on waiting for the spring, when it comes, it comes. They are not running after spring. They are not making any speech, they are not creating any movement that why spring comes only once a year, why not twice, and why not it remains always. The whole world is silently waiting. Except man, there is no impatience anywhere. And impatience makes you ugly. And impatience is a disturbance in your meditation. So learn to be waiting. Be patient. And trust that all that you have to do is go on deeper in meditation. Beyond mind into silence. No thoughts, no emotions, no moods, just a silent watchfulness and waiting whatever existence finds you ready for. Grace comes, but it comes without a whisper. You suddenly find it. You feel it within, you feel it in your movements, you feel it in your sleep, you feel it in your speech, everywhere you are engulfed. But the only thing that is needed on your part is a deep wakefulness. Meditation will create watchfulness. And you have to learn the art of waiting. Philosophical Phyllis says she has learned three discouraging things about men. One, they go to war and kill each other when, if only they would be patient, they would die a natural death. Two, they climb trees and knock down apples when, if only they would be patient, the apples would fall to the ground. Three, they pursue women when, if only they would be patient, women would pursue them. One has to learn the art of waiting. And then millions of things will happen to you, which never happen to impatient people. A man fell out of a 10th-story window. He is lying on the ground with a big crowd around him. A cop walks over and says, "What happened?" The guy says, "I don't know. I just got here." You have also just experiencing things. In a school in one of Chicago's poorer districts, a questionnaire was sent home with a girl pupil requesting information regarding the number of brothers and sisters, her father's occupation, etc. The next day she returned with a scrap of paper on which was the following: "There are 18 children in my family. My father can also do plumbing and carpentry work."
Yes.
Wait. People are engaged so much. Now think of that man. 18 children, and still he can do plumbing and carpentry work. Give a little time to yourself. And in the end you will find that is the only time you have really lived. Just even if you can give 1 hour out of 24 hours to yourself, to your meditation, to your silence, just being, not doing anything, just waiting and learning to wait, in the end of your life you will be surprised that your 23 hours have gone waste. Only that 1 hour, whatever you have gained in that 1 hour is still with you and is going with you. Even death cannot take it away. Just 1 hour can give you immense peace, silence, blissfulness, and slowly, slowly the aura of grace will arise around you.
Beloved Bhagwan, can you talk a bit more about acceptance?
Chintan, I understand your question. Chintan is on the verge of death. And almost 1 month has passed. He had inquired me when the doctors had said he has some cancerous growth which is not operable. And it is fast growing. Naturally he was shocked. A young man has not seen life yet, has not yet lived. Just in the middle, naturally he was shocked very much. He wrote to me and I told him that there is no need to be shocked. You are fortunate because you know the exact time when your life will be finished. Others are not so fortunate. They don't know. They may be terminated tomorrow. Because you know exactly that within 2 months you are going to die, live these 2 months as intensively and as joyfully and as meditatively as possible, because you cannot postpone. Others can postpone because they are not aware when they are going to die. You are in a good situation because you cannot postpone. You have to do everything now. And he understood, and he has been very happy, very joyous, meditating, dancing, singing, and his friends have written to me that we could not believe such a change. His doctors are wondering that they have never seen anybody taking his death so beautifully, so lightly. His question needed this context for you to understand. When he says, can you talk a bit more about acceptance? Acceptance has a hidden reluctance. You may not have looked into the world when you say accept it. There is a hidden reluctance, a kind of compulsoriness, because there is nothing else to do. So why make fuss about it? Accept it. I would like that just this kind of acceptance is not true and authentic. I would say enjoy it. Unless your acceptance is enjoyment, unless your acceptance is wholehearted, without any reluctance, not out of any compulsion, not out of a particular situation, but out of your understanding. Acceptance becomes a beautiful experience if it is at the same time enjoyment. You are not accepting under the pressure of circumstances. You are accepting on your own accord. With joy, with a deep welcome, then only you understand what acceptance can do to your being. In a single moment, it can change you, transform you from an ordinary human being into an awakened human being. But don't accept reluctantly. That is deceiving yourself, because deep down you don't want to accept. Just after 2 months you are going to die. And naturally, when somebody said, accept it, what else to therapy? They are doing everything that is possible. But they know that nothing is going to help. The cancer has gone beyond the limits of their cure. Seeing the situation, you can accept it. But there will be a negativity inside you. You are accepting because nothing else can be done. If there was some possibility to do, you would not accept it. I don't call this authentic acceptance. Authentic acceptance has no negative tone in it, no reluctance, no resistance, no compulsiveness. It is not because of the pressure of things and situations and our helplessness. Don't accept out of helplessness. Accept out of your strength. 2 months are too much to live. One can live as intensely and totally in 1 second as people live in their whole life. But their living is very thin, spread all over a long time. That does not mean that they are fortunate ones. Because authentic living needs great intensity and great totality. Not a thin layer, a lukewarm survival is not living. But if you know the next moment you are going to die, you will drop everything that you were involved in, and the only priority will be to know yourself before death comes. At least be aware who you are. You don't have time to postponement. It happened that one man used to come to a mystic Eknath for many years. He was a devotee, but there was a doubt in his mind that was continuously pinching him. And because there was always many disciples, so he could not ask. One day he came very early, before sunrise. Eknath was just coming out of the river, had taken a bath for his morning meditation in the temple, where he reached and said, "Forgive me to disturb at this time, but I have been carrying a question my whole life," and he was a young man, healthy, strong, "and I cannot dissolve it. It continues. It is a disturbance between me and you. Ignace said, what is the problem? He said, the problem is, I have seen you for many years. I have never seen you sad. I have never seen you angry. I have never seen you jealous. I have never seen you in any negative states of mind. You are always smiling and always joyous and relaxed, as if there is no worry in the world, no problem in the world. You don't seem to be concerned even about death. You take it so lightly. And the problem is that a doubt arises in me, are you an actor? Are really you are enlightened? Because one can manage to act smiling, always showing joyousness, taking everything lightly, never seriously. Is it just a discipline? Have you trained yourself for it? Or is it something that has happened to you? It is not your doing, but a natural, spontaneous understanding that has arisen out of your meditations. That question has been bothering me, because we can manage to pretend. You see actors in the films, and you know them. They are one of the most miserable lot in the world. But in the film, they look so joyous, so happy. So loving, so peaceful, so courageous. If this is possible to do in a film or in a drama, then why is it not possible to do in real life? Just you need a little control, not to show your real feelings, but always go on acting. Ignace said, wait a minute. Before I answer your question, I should not forget something that I wanted to tell you. And I have been forgetting for 3 days. And it is important. So first that thing I will tell you, and then I will answer your question. Just 3 or 4 days before, I happened to look at your hand and I was shocked very much. Your lifeline is finished. Just such a small fraction has remained that you may able to live 7 days at the most. 7th day, as the sun will be setting, you will be dying. This I have been forgetting, and this is too important than your question. Now we can discuss about your question. The man stood up. He said, I don't have any question, and I don't have any time to discuss. If death is coming within 7 days, why should I worry whether you are real or unreal? That is your business, it is not my problem. And the man started getting down the steps. There were many steps of the temple, and Eknath watched him. Just 5 minutes before, he had come so strong. So young, and now he was going just like an old man. Wobbling. Taking the support of the railing that he had never taken before. Afraid to fall. And when he reached home, he simply went to bed directly. That was not the time, it was morning. He had just got up from the bed, and he collected the whole family and told them what Eknath has said. And it was inconceivable that Eknath will lie. There is no point in lying. So there was crying and weeping, and that man stopped eating. What is the point now? When you are not going to live, but a strange thing started happening as he became settled with the idea that death is coming and nothing can be done. Why not use this time for the meditation that I have been postponing for many years? Eknath goes on telling every day, meditate, put your energy to discover yourself, and I have been postponing it. But what is the hurry? I am a young man. And these things, meditation and knowing yourself, belong to the old people when they have nothing else to do. Anyway, they are out of work, retired. That is the right time to meditate and find out who you are. Right now you have to find out many other things, the money, power, prestige, respectability. This is not the time to waste in finding yourself. That you can do at any moment when you will not be of any use in life, and life will be rejecting you by retiring you. It is strange that everywhere when people are retired, their colleagues gather together just to say them goodbye, and they always give them a pocket watch. That I cannot believe. What is the idea? But now I know. They are giving them the pocket watch that not much thing that you have been postponing. He lied down and started for the first time watching his mind. Became utterly silent within 2-3 days. But the whole family and other relatives and friends from far away reach, they were even more disturbed. Death is coming, that is a shock. And what has happened to this man? Because he does not open his eyes, he does not eat, he does not take any interest. This was the time to meet the family, the friends, because again, who knows when you will ever meet these people. There is not much chance. But he is not interested in anything. He did not allow them to call a physician even. By the 4th day, they could not believe. Silent, that his whole bedroom almost had the same quality which exists around a man of silence, or which exists in a living temple, where not only statues are, but some living master is also present. People came with great words, prepared dialogues, which one needs to say, because it is very embarrassing to come to a man who is going to die. What to say to him? You cannot talk about movies, you cannot talk about politics, you cannot talk about football games, you cannot talk about boxing. What is there to talk? It is very embarrassing if somebody is dying and you have to go. Then one prepares a dialogue to console him, then don't be worried, everybody dies. It is not that is happening only to you. And then there is God. And you have been a virtuous man. And your heaven is absolutely guaranteed. Things like that one has to prepare Because now the worldly things that one gossips with each other are of no point. But as they entered there, even this dialogue was not possible. The man was so silent. Seventh day, he opened his eyes and asked his family how much time is left for the sun to set. Reading this story, I remembered why that pocket watch is given to people, so they don't need even to ask anybody else. Just look at your pocket watch and be finished. Never present a pocket watch to anybody, because that means simply that you have taken it for granted that this man is gone. Pocket watch is the last present. And the people said that the sun is just to set within few minutes. And he was showing such grace, such joy, such blissfulness, that the family could not believe that these 7 days has been a metamorphosis. He was an ordinary man. They all knew, the wife knew, the father knew, the brothers knew that he had nothing special, but in 7 days he is far beyond them. And exactly as the sun was setting, they all started crying and weeping, and he was saying to them, "Be quiet. There is nothing to worry." At that moment, Eknath reached. The whole family touched his feet and told him that, "Save him. You can do anything." Eknath said, "With death, there is no possibility. Just let me see him." So they all respectfully moved and gave way to Eknath. The man was silently, with closed eyes, was looking almost like a marble statue of Gautam Buddha. Just 7 days, and he was an ordinary person. Eknath called his name and said, "I have come to see you and to tell you that it was only a device. You are not going to die. Your lifelong line is very long. you will live almost as much as you have lived. Only half lifeline you have lived. So there are many years to live. This was a way to answer you, your question. The man said, "My God, I have never thought that this is a way to answer my question." Itna said, there was no other way. Whatever I would have said to you would have remained with doubts. A man who can pretend for years to be happy can also lie that I am enlightened. I wanted to give you some experience of it, that it is not acting. And these 7 days have given you the experience. Have you received the answer or not? The man stood up, jumped out of the bed. For 7 days he had not left the bed at all. Touched the feet of Eknath and said, "Your compassion is great. Unless your compassion was so great, you would not have lied. But you have answered my question. Now there is no doubt at all. And I cannot see that any doubt in the future is possible. I have known the space in which you are living." Eknath said, "It does not matter whether you are going to die after 7 days or 70 years. Once you become aware that you are going to die, it doesn't matter when. The awareness of death makes you live life as totally, as joyously as possible. Death is not your enemy. In fact, it is an invitation for you to live intensely, totally, squeeze every drop of juice from every moment. Death is a tremendous challenge and invitation. Without death, there would not have been any Gautam Buddha, any Jesus, any Lao Tzu, any Tilopa. There would not have been any Kabir, any Radas, any Mansur, any Sarmad. It is death and its awareness that makes you live as totally, as deeply, as consciously as possible. Because before death knocks on your doors, you should be able to see the eternal life within you. Then there is no doubt. Death is a fiction. It is a reality only to those who have not lived. Not lived in its completeness, in its entirety. Those who have lived, for them there is no death. It is only a change. Just changing the house. I am reminded that one night a thief entered in Mullah Nasruddin's house, and Mullah Nasruddin was trying to sleep. He had only one blanket. So half was used as a bed and half to cover himself. But the sleep was not coming because the mosquitoes are so much interested in keeping you awake. They are great teachers who are continuously making effort that you should not fall asleep. Their whole teaching is awareness. I have always thought that these mosquitoes seem to be old masters trying their own teaching. Now they cannot speak, but they can manage to keep you awake. So Mullah was turning and tossing, and then suddenly he saw a thief entering. It was dark night. And the door was open, the thief was amazed. He hardly figured out that some man is sleeping, and the house seems to be completely empty and all doors are open, a great opportunity. So he entered inside the house, went on going to the innermost room, not being aware that he is being followed by Mullah Nasruddin. Suddenly Mullah stumbled on something, so the thief became aware. Mullah said, "Don't be worried. I have been living in this house for 30 years. I have not found anything up to now." But perhaps with your expertise, we both can try to find. 50-50. The thief could not believe what kind of man is this. It is his own house. He became a little afraid. This man seems to be either mad or very dangerous. And Mullah said, "Don't be worried. If you are not agreeing on 50-50, you can have 60, I can have 40, or whatever you want. Because 30 years I have wasted searching and searching, I have not found anything. So whatever you want me to give, even 5% commission will do. You try." and I have brought a candle. He lit the candle and he said, because it is dark, it will be difficult for you. So I will keep the candle and you search. The thief said that I have been also stealing for the same time 30 years, but I have never met such a man like you. You amaze me. But there was nothing at all, so they went around the whole house, they could not find anything. Finally the thief said that, you are right, there is nothing to find. As he was going out, he had been before into other houses, and he has left all the things that he has stolen from other houses outside the house. Mullah went with him, threw his blanket also in the pile. The thief said, what are you doing? He said, nothing. I am coming with you. Just changing houses. And I said, this is an unnecessary trouble, and this man seems to be a little crazy type. He said, you can take your blanket. He said, no. Either 50-50. But he said, these things I have stolen from other houses. He said, that does not matter. Otherwise the police station. 50-50. But this is my only business. I keep my house open. Thieves come, we do the business. The man said, you seem to be the greatest thief in the world. You never go out. Thieves come by themselves. He said, it has been happening. But if you want, I am prepared to come with you. Because what is there in this house? The man became so afraid of him, because he could not put him into any category. He said, you can keep everything, just leave me. And I will never come back. Mullah said, as you wish. Otherwise, I was always thinking to change the house. You will also get the blanket and the whole treasure that you have stolen from other houses, and me, who can advise you . You are just amateur. You may be stealing for 30 years, but you don't know much. I don't go anywhere, and thieves come by themselves, and 50-50, sometimes even more, sometimes 100%, because I am always ready to change the house, and they are afraid to take me to their house. The man who knows himself knows death as only changing the house.
acceptance is not the right word, but there is no other word. This is the difficulty. I would say Chintan, rejoice. Make all these days a celebration. And if you can make all these days a celebration, your death will be found to be a fiction. These days of celebration and meditation and silence and joy and love will create in you the capacity to die consciously. And one who dies consciously knows that death is nothing but changing the house. And it is always for a better house, because life always goes upwards. It is an evolutionary process. I was really shocked by American government, particularly Ronald Reagan's government. They have prohibited in the universities and colleges and schools that the theory of evolution by Charles Darwin should not be taught. Books on the theory of evolution from all libraries have been burned, removed. Because this theory of evolution goes against the Christian idea of creation. You may not immediately get the difference, but the difference is there. God created everything. There is no question of any evolution. He created monkeys as monkeys, and He created man as man. Not that the monkeys have evolved into man. There is no evolution. God has made the world perfect. Evolution is possible only if things are imperfect. This fundamentalist, fascist, fanatic idea of Ronald Reagan, he has imposed on the whole of America. And nobody is protesting. That this is against the Constitution of America. It is against democracy, it is against freedom of expression. An American Constitution makes it clear that religion should not interfere with people's life, particularly via government powers. Government should be neutral, but this is not neutrality. And to stop the whole America knowing anything about Charles Darwin and his theory of evolution is dangerous because it means you cannot evolve. You are what you are. It is dangerous. I am not saying whether Charles Darwin is right or wrong. That is not my business. I am saying the idea of evolution should not be taken away from people's mind. In fact, they should be made more aware that for thousands of years we are not evolving. We should evolve. And now, outside we have got everything, evolution should take a different dimension, inner evolution. But to destroy the whole idea, Ronald Reagan has done much harm to America, but this is his greatest harm, because this will mean if the idea of evolution completely disappears from people's mind, then wherever they are, God wants them to be there, in misery, in suffering, in anguish, in angst. But that's what God wants, and there is no possibility of evolution. I don't support the particulars of Charles Darwin, but I support the essential fact that evolution has been happening, because we have seen man becoming a Gautam Buddha. I don't agree that monkeys have become men. And even if they have become, it does not bother me. It is perfectly good. My concern is for the future, not for the past. I want men to evolve. It does not matter whether monkeys evolve into men or not, but man can evolve into Superman, into new man. But that evolution will happen only through deep meditation, watchfulness, waiting, and accepting life with joy, and accepting death with joy, with no reluctance, without any pressure, but from your innermost feeling. Everything that is beautiful. It can be more beautiful. There is no limit to evolution. Particularly for consciousness, there is no limit. It can go even beyond Gautam Buddha, beyond Bodhidharma, beyond all the great awakened people of the past, because consciousness has no limits. It is as vast as the sky, as the whole universe. Chintan, accept with joy and dance and song. Just a little joke so that you go from here not with serious faces. This temple believes in laughter. And I want everybody who comes here to go laughing, even on the way when he remembers a little giggle. In the night, in the middle of the night, when he remembers a good laughter is the greatest prayer. A little boy on a picnic strays away from his family and suddenly realizes he is lost. And night is falling. After running around and shouting for a while, he becomes very frightened and kneels down to pray with uplifted hands. Dear Lord, he says, please help me to find my mummy and daddy, and I promise I won't hit my sister anymore. Just then a bird flies overhead and sits right into his outstretched hands. The boy examines it, looks up to heaven and says, Lord, don't give me this sick. I really am lost. Everybody is really lost. Very few people have reached their home. But your pilgrimage of finding your home should not be serious and sad and heavy. It should be of laughter and song and dance. If you can find your home dancing and laughing, it is true finding. By sadness and seriousness, you are bound to find some graveyard, not your home. We need people who are seekers but not serious. That kind of seeking, serious and sad, has not led men anywhere. Okay, Manisha.
Yes, Bhagavan.